Yes, yes, yes. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast live. This is a special broadcast edition of a Fab preview. We've got Fab happening on Sunday. By the way, I was like exhausted, tired, and there's nothing like that intro music just kind of pumped me up, and now I'm ready to go.
It is Fab talking Saturday night. I know everybody listening is really excited. They've been clamoring to get Vlad's on the mic for a Saturday night Fab session. I know he's kind of been the industry standard with Fab articles, so I'm excited to write his coattails on this podcast and talk some Fab. Hope we help some people out tonight and have a good time.
Yeah, it happens to be a good week for it. We've had a couple of very, very huge weeks, prospects called up, but this is it's par for the course. Like every single year there are, you just have these weeks where just a whole bunch of prospects come up. A lot of times we call it, Fabapalooza or whatnot. But this does kind of seem like a big one. For those not familiar with us, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is Jason Anthony on social media. You can find us at RotoGut. That's me. Jason's at Booms 62. Can I bring up what I asked you right before the show about that number?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what is 62? You told me about the golf thing, but that 62 is no longer a thing.
Yeah, past life, I was a golfer. So the nickname Booms actually came from when I started playing golf. It was boom, boom, once for when I hit the ball, once for when I hit the tree. And then I straightened out, became Booms. And then the 62 was my low round. So it was boom 62 I always went by. But only problem is I just shot a 61 about 6 months ago. So now I got to retread everything or just be a fraud, I guess, be a poser.
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's a little update in Twitter. You probably have to, fill out 15 forms online and you'll be able to change your handle. You know how it is.
I just don't like odd numbers though. So I'm really in a pickle here.
Yeah. No, tough call. Tough call for sure. All right. We'll try to, it is late. It's Saturday night. For those that are going to listen to this, maybe on Sunday, we're recording late night Saturday, May 9th. It's close to midnight on the East Coast. We're close to 9 o'clock here on the West side. But we're going to run through, basically the big five. It's Spencer Jones, Robbie Snelling, Joe Mack, Bryce Eldridge, and Ryan Waldschmidt. Talk about some streamers for 15 team and 12 team pitchers, maybe some drops along the way, and then hitter streamers as well. And the one thing I noticed as I'm writing every week and I put things together and a little background, usually I start on Thursday night and Friday, and I spend a good chunk of Friday going through the entire player pool, the 15 and the 12 team, to put the data tables together. And this year I started doing like a player type archetype, if you will. And what I noticed is where a lot of times we look at things rest of season or like, oh yeah, this guy is, we're gonna be able to hold him for the year. What I kind of call staying power, I feel less confident at being able to, declare someone a staying power guy. And it's not just wanting to not be wrong and not lead people astray, but it's also, it feels like almost everyone is a streamer these days. It's far and few between where guys come through available in Fab. You're like, oh, I could just see this working out for the whole year. And when they do, they go for a lot of money. One of the pickles I was in with is, with like Jack Flaherty. I'm sure we'll talk about him. But I mean, this is a guy that has a good track record for the most part over the few years. But a big roller coaster ride is just, but he's got the name brand, it's Jack Flaherty. Everybody knows him. It feels like somebody should be rostered in 15 teamers, but then it's hard to do it. And then now we're in a position where all of a sudden he's got a two star, he's coming off a 10 strike game. And like, how do you label these guys sometimes? Like, is everybody pretty much like, day to day, week to week?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard, right? Because these skills, they're right in front of you, and Flaherty seems like an easy drop, but he has that strikeout upside. I don't know what his K minus walk is, about 15%. How many guys on Fab are we picking up, even with how bad Flaherty's been with that skill set? So it's one of those things that, it feels like a emotional drop sometimes to get him off our roster rather than kind of go back to the robot drop. Is there someone better that can make your team better? you know, go back all the way to J.R. Ritchie. Is J.R. Ritchie better than Jack Flaherty? There's a big question mark there, right? Look at how much we spent as a group on J.R. Ritchie without really anywhere near the strikeout upside Flaherty has. Now, both of them have combustibility, but staying power, everything changes so quickly. There's so many injuries. I think everyone has staying power if they can do anything decent, right? As long as they can stay healthy.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, I'm personally tilting pretty hard in main event team that's been pretty good and has a decent pitching staff. I had a really difficult pitching decision. Actually, it was some pitchers in bad matchups and others in good matchups. And at the end of the day, I played Sean Burke and Andrew Painter. Painter originally was supposed to get Colorado at home, Sean Burke, Seattle at home. He had been pitching well. Who did I sit? I sat Bryce Elder and Spencer Strider. What a huge difference. Like, that 2-for-2 is making for me this week. It's absolutely killing me.
Yeah. I mean, and it, you know, the Strider bench on paper makes a lot of sense with how he looked in Coors going to the Dodgers. Like, seems like a smart play, right? But he just shoved tonight. So yeah, that one's going to sting a little bit. You know, that's kind of what is the curse of having depth. You when you have to make those choices, it becomes harder. And you know, you can't look back, gotta look forward. And you know, maybe Strider's that circle of trust now where it's not a question. And you know, Bryce Elder, man, he might be there too. It's hard to look at that name and say circle of trust, but he's been really just consistently good. So yeah, it's challenging. I'm on the same page.
Do you think people might be, they're out looking for advice, might be a little bit of a disadvantage when you're watching people that are really no pitching, but are sort of maybe missing the forest for the trees, or are so technical where they could lead you astray, right? Like, you know, in the case of Strider, oh, the fastball, you know, this and that. All of a sudden you're like, well, I'd be stupid to play him, when in your instinct, you're like, I have Spencer Strider on my team. I got to just roll it out there. Right. Like, anyone can have any offense can choke at any given time. And sometimes you get into that analysis by paralysis by analysis, where you're just like, okay, we're getting too deep into the weeds here. We've been watching baseball and playing fantasy for so long. We have to trust ourselves at some point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the eye test that, you know, so many of us fell in love with this fantasy game by watching baseball, right? And looking at these players watching, oh, that guy looks like something. Let me look at the stats. It's kind of turned in such an analytic game. And you see this paralysis, even with front offices and management, how they manage games. And so the really good managers in real baseball, the real baseball managers, kind of have that blend of analytics and the gut. And you know, your nickname, the Roto Gut, I know you've gone against projections and analytics quite a bit to have your success because of that feeling. And we still have to use that. Like, the analytics only tell us so much. At the end of the day, you know, I hear this all the time. Are we playing in a Sierra League, or, you know, are we playing with our, you know, our five counting stats that we use? Mm-hmm. They're all indicators, but at the end of the day, ERA, whip, strikeouts, wins, and saves for pitchers. That's it. Yeah. Not the 15 other underlying we're looking at: ground ball rate, hard hit rate, Z contact, like all this stuff that we're trying to find it. So yeah, at some point you really just got to use that blend and hit the override button. You know, it's not always just a plug and play with projections. So it's that challenge, and it kind of tends to burn you when you go one way and then you think you've done the other way and it burns you again. And it's just and we always think of the bad decisions. We don't remember the good ones, right?
Of course. Of course. And I think process plays a part of it. You know, you mentioned some of those underlying metrics, but like for pitching, if I'm looking at a starter, a starting decision for one of my pitchers, and one of them has an ERA that's like two runs higher than their CR in the XFIP, and, you know, like a crazy low crazy high BABIP, and, you know, high strand rate, or low, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, it's just all, and on top of that, they have a good matchup. They have a strong matchup, you know, they're at home against the Rockies or the Nationals or something like that. Like, it just makes sense to go for it. Like, those are bounce back spots for humans, right? They're like, okay, I'm not going into Yankee Stadium here. I've had some bad luck facing the Rockies. They just got back from Colorado, you know, from the elevation, and I'm ready to dazzle. So I think, you know, sometimes leaning on that is a good way to go.
Yeah, and I think we do get wrapped up in matchups a lot, for good reason. There's a lot of bad offenses, but I think it was Rob Silver. He was saying the home matchup versus the road matchup plays a much bigger factor than the bad lineup versus the good lineup. Yeah. The winning percentage of teams at home is significantly higher. These pitchers just pitch better at home. So, you know, it was something I really looked into because you say, oh, you know, I got, you know, the Rockies on the road. Obviously, that's at home, away from Coors, it's an easy start. But you go against these teams that you think are going to be bad, and there's pesky, and your guy just goes four and runs in five innings. You're like, what happened? Oh, he's on the road. Right, he's not at home, so there is something to that home cooking. But yeah, it's that puzzle we're trying to put together, and we're running out of healthy arms to put that puzzle together, so yeah, it becomes more challenging every week.
Well, let's talk about the big five right now. I mean, the way that it lines up, I had mentioned them earlier, but Robbie Snelling on the pitching side, and then four hitters. Joe Mack is a catcher. He's up for Agustin Ramirez, who's down to go work on his defense in AAA. You got a couple of big boppers in Spencer Jones and Bryce Eldridge, who hit a home run today and says he's bringing the sexy. And then you've got Ryan Waldschmidt, who's now up for Arizona Diamondbacks. He is their top prospect. Former first rounder, center fielder. I think he went 0-for-3 with three strikeouts today. These are tough moves, right? Like just in general, I don't know if you want to, you know, go through them one at a time, but part of it is need for our roster. And part of it is, you know, like you need some power, and somebody like Jones or Eldridge just kind of fits the bill for you. You need some pitching. Robbie Snelling's available. And then at the same time, it's, you want to make sure your investment is worth it, right? Because some of these guys, well, maybe a lot of them are going to go for over $100 in 15s, maybe even some 12s. And, you know, is it worth it, right? Like I maybe we'll start with Spencer Jones. I was starting to go through the exercise in Trust the Gut. My Fab article today was like, okay, let's see. What is the scenario here? Okay, we know power is prodigious. We know he strikes out a ton more than just about anyone. He's going to be streaky. That's just kind of the profile there. And then what happens if, you know, he just strikes out a whole bunch? Like how much runway does he have? And when Stanton comes back, eventually Dominguez, like, is he here? Is he potentially here to stay? Like, we don't know what's going to happen. He can go off and have a hot week that can keep him here longer. But how do you justify a $100+ spend on someone just because his name is Spencer Jones and we know he's got a lot of home run power?
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging because not only did they not have room for Spencer Jones when everyone's healthy, they didn't have room for Jason Dominguez. And so you have a team now with a couple injured guys that were going to get injured. That's why people stash Jason Dominguez. But when you look at Spencer Jones, he's really challenging for me. You're looking at a 32% K rate in the minors, 59% contact rate. Like, that does not translate about ever when they move up a level, because that usually jumps anywhere, you know, from 4 to 10%. Mm-hmm. So I'm very out on Spencer Jones. Now, the math you need to do, and I don't envy your job on this, giving bid ranges for someone like this, because they are extremely wide. You got to play it as probably a 2-week pickup. And then to kind of see from there. I don't see a scenario when Stanton or Dominguez come back that Jones can play well enough to kind of usurp their job, and he'd be the first one to go back down. So if I can get two big weeks out of him and get him for a reasonable price, I'm interested. But like you said, the price is not going to be a 2-week price. You're talking about a rest of season price because they dream on that 90th percentile outcome.
So say there are some decent outfielders, say there's somebody available in your league that's like, you know, was dropped, but they're 97% rostered and they should be had on your roster. And you know, you can probably get them for under 50, but you also maybe want to keep them honest bid on Spencer Jones. Like, what do you do in a scenario like that? Do you put him as your priority bid? Do you put him, you know, below there? Just, you know, if you put him below there, you're not taking a chance. But if you do take the chance, you're kind of taking a player you may not even want. Like, what would you do in that scenario?
You know, I'm just looking at the list I put together. You know, I'm probably putting Jacob Young ahead of Spencer Jones on my list. So that means I'll have zero Spencer Jones.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, exactly. You almost have to go into it thinking like I'm just not going to get in. I'm not going to get this guy. I think maybe you're playing some 12 teamers, some OCs. I mean, crazy things happen there, right? I think I got Travis Bazana for like $7 or something. Just put him, you know, fourth on my bid range, and you know, in other leagues, he's going for 100+. So you never know. Sometimes you just got to throw it out there, and sometimes you just get lucky. Sometimes it just ends up working out. So would you say Bryce Eldridge has more, like, kind of a longer leash, more staying power than Jones?
I think that's a no-brainer. I think they're very similar profiles. The Giants called him up because they are the worst team in the major leagues. As a Giants fan, I kind of turned the game off tonight in disgust, even though Bryce Eldridge did hit a homer, as you mentioned. They're playing such a bad brand of baseball. They really can't afford, even if he struggles, to not kind of keep going with him. You know, his contact rate and his K rate are much better than what Spencer Jones was in the minor leagues, both with immense power. Mm-hmm. My concern with Bryce Eldridge is they have not put him in the field yet. It's been all DH. And they sat him against a right-hander yesterday because they have one too many healthy hitters, which is ironic for a team that can't score, mm-hmm. that you can't get a bat like this in the lineup every day. So you're probably looking 4 or 5 out of 6 games a week. I don't know what they're going to do against lefties. So there is some concern there. And then you have that UT label. And if you have a team with a Kyle Schwarber or an Ohtani or, you know, some of the good UTs, I don't know when or if Eldridge is going to get that first base eligibility to be really become more helpful. I have a team last week that had Schwarber that I was planning on trying to bid really low on Eldridge before he got called up, just to see if I could stash him, see if he'd play first base. But so far he has not been in the field. So he has much more staying power than Spencer Jones, to your question, but there's not everyday playing time. So a lot of power. I don't know what the average is going to look like, but you're not getting everyday at bats.
So if like I'm looking at my, you know, like what I have for FABID ranges and just like on the 15 or 15 teamers, looks like I'm probably too high on Spencer Jones because, you know, it's a tough sort of line to straddle because I want to make sure people aren't overspending, but at the same time that they're in range if they want somebody. I just have to kind of keep it as real as possible for people, right? Like, if I'm not spending 100, 150 for Spencer Jones, and there are probably so few people that like really need to go there, you know, there is too much of a difference between, you know, Eldridge, who I have like $30 to $50, which probably isn't even a fair range. So I'm thinking, you know, with the Eldridge, it's just the fact that it's utility only right now. It's San Francisco, similar profile to Jones, but in all honesty, they're probably pretty close, and Eldridge probably gets a little bit more of that staying power.
Yeah, but you got to factor in the UT discount, right? It's always a huge discount when they're UT only.
Yeah, that's true. And he was available in some leagues last week, and he did not go for a lot. So even though he was called up kind of late on Sunday.
Yeah.
The other hitter there, Ryan Waldschmidt, he's a very interesting prospect. I mean, he was, you know, people loved him in the DC season, draft champions. He had a nice spring. Figured he'd be up eventually. He's going to play center field. Alec Thomas, that experiment is over. And Waldschmidt, he's got some speed. He's got some good raw power that's developing. He hasn't hit 20+ in the minors yet, but he's a nice prospect. And I mean, it's possible that of the three, he might be the one is going to stick around. And I think maybe he's even somebody that you even deal with some hardships, right? Like maybe early on he struggles, like in his open, you know, first game, he went 0-for-3, like with 3 Ks. If he does that again on Sunday, I don't know. Does that keep the bid range down? Does that, you know, present maybe a buying opportunity versus the other guys? Where are you on Ryan Waldschmidt?
I'm a fan, especially with them kind of DFAing Alec Thomas. Alec Thomas was kind of like their good boy. Like they just always love talking about Alec Thomas and how he's such an integral part of that team. And for them to DFA and kind of clear a path for their first round pick to come in and play center field, I think he's going to be get a really long leash. I do believe he's probably that fantasy player that's a better real life baseball player right now than a fantasy player. And he's going to be a good baseball player, but I don't know. He's going to steal some bases. He's going to hit some homers. He's going to have a not a terrible batting average, but is he going to be that exciting, you know, Fernando Tatis call up? No.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of temper the expectations. I think the bidding is going to be pretty hot and heavy for the profile. But I think you're looking at maybe, you know, 10-10 the rest of the year, which is helpful, but not for probably not equal out to what the valuation of the fab prices will be.
Yeah. And finally from that list, Robbie Snelling, the debut wasn't a gem. He's rostered in most 15 teamers. In any ones that he is available in, it's going to go for 100+. I'm pretty sure. I don't think his sort of subpar initial start with some poor control is going to affect it all that much. My question is more in like for 12 teamers. Like, I feel like I don't quite really know. I think a lot of us don't know who, you know, Robbie Snelling really is and how he's going to factor in among the best pitchers this year. Is he like a top 50 guy? Is he outside the top 50? He's a top 50 guy. He can be on our rosters for a long time. But what's that cost, right? Like, why in a 12-teamer where there are always pitchers that you can stream, there's always somebody available on the waiver wire you can pick up, you could really build up a good staff. Is it worth spending a lot of money just basically for the name brand or the home park, things like that?
You know, in the 12s, I would say even more than the 15s for me as far as worth the dart. You know, you're looking for that breakout, that guy that's going to strike out, you know, 12 per nine in the 12s. And you're willing to take that risk because the replacement value is so obtainable. Where in the 15, if you put that big bid on him and he's not what he looks like in the minors, that's your one big bullet, maybe two. And you really you can't afford to miss that. We all know in the 12s how efficient we can be operating with $1-$2 bids. The 15s don't operate the same way. So I'm much more willing to take the chance in the 12s. You know, if he's available in any 15s, I'm definitely looking at him because he was so good in AAA. You know, I selfishly have been stashing Braxton Garrett for a couple of weeks. And so, you know, selfishly, I'm kind of hoping that he can't kind of figure it out and they get Garrett up because he's kind of wasting away in the minors. But Snelling looks like the real deal.
How hard is it, by the way, to separate that, right? Like when you have ownership in something or somebody like a Braxton Garrett, right? Didn't you draft him too?
No, I picked him up everywhere I could about 2 weeks ago for a couple bucks. He was dealing in AAA, so I thought, you know, he'd be next in line. I was kind of shocked they put Snelling in front of him, but, you know, the Marlins have been pretty aggressive with their young players.
Sometimes tough. You're almost sometimes rooting against something from happening, especially when someone's going to go for a lot of money and you just, you know, so besides that, I almost forgot to mention Joe Mack. The catcher for the Marlins. So he's been kind of struggling in his first week up in the bigs. He did have a couple of hits today on Saturday. He batted ninth. He's sitting against righties and lefties. He's pretty good defensively. You know, obviously much better than Agustin, that's what he's down in the minors working on. When I'm looking at catcher bids, I'm, you know, 15 is a different animal. You can always use a guy like that in a 15. It's usually just a matter of, you know, at what cost. And I want to also see like who has gone on the IL this week, like what catchers are lost and who else might be bidding. So if you really want to do the homework and you really want a Joe Mack, go look and see who's got Yainer Diaz and needs some coverage or, you know, Luis Camposano. You know, those are the two catchers that were dropped this week. So that's one thing I look at. And then also if I'm looking to replace a catcher in a 12, I want to make sure that it's a clear upgrade, because if I'm spending even $20 and I'm just switching him for, you know, Carson Kelly, and then I'm going to go after Kelly again the next week when Joe Mack sucks for a week, like I don't want to play that game, that, you know, that wasting money game. So I want to make sure it's an upgrade. Like if it's for a Caratini or Carlos Narvaez, and then maybe something like that makes sense. But we also want to be careful. We don't want to be in the set and forget it mode. Like, oh, I got Joe Mack. He's my C2. I'm just going to roll with it. No, you still want to be able to kind of optimize your lineups every week and not just set and forget things.
Yeah, I don't believe he's a top 10 catcher out of the gate. So, you know, give me Dylan Dingler, give me Ryan Jeffers, you know, give me all these catcher twos over him. He seems like a better hitting Patrick Bailey, if elite defense. They say his pop time's incredible. And so that was one of the main reasons he got called up. You know, he had a manageable K rate in the minors, 21.4%, contact rate at 80%, pretty good max EV. So he can hit. But man, that jump to the major leagues and managing a pitching staff, what is that going to take on his offense? You know, the catching prices in 15s are always, I always have a hard time with how expensive they are. But, you know, there's just not a lot of good players. And everybody's kind of, there's a lot of people struggling with their catcher two, if not their catcher one. So he's not going to be cheap. I think he sticks. I saw there was quite a few drops of our boy Agustin. And I think he'll be back, not in long order, but I mean, I don't know if he's going to play first base or stay at catcher down there. But between Liam Hicks and Joe Mack, they have two pretty solid catchers right now in Miami. So it'll be interesting. You know, it's interesting because this is a week with catcher, and I kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but with the Giants trading Patrick Bailey, that actually opened up not one, but two catching options with Jesus Rodriguez and Daniel Susak. Both are going to play. And then there's one more sneaky one in Adrian Del Castillo, who has 9 games at catcher right now, and he's UT only. So if you can kind of manage to swallow, bad catcher two and pick him up for cheap, he'd be a pretty good catcher two once he gets that eligibility. You're muted, Vlad.
He's been at 9 for a while, huh?
Yeah.
Because he's been a DH. He's been DHing all week against righties. That's a good call. I actually am curious who Arizona's playing on, what pitcher they're facing on Sunday, and if there's a chance he might catch maybe Marino. Marino had a day off on Thursday, so I don't know if he'll get one again on Sunday, but that would be nice if Del Castillo got that eligibility. I'm happy you went here because that's where I was going to take it next. Actually, it just made sense to go from Joe Mack to the San Francisco Giants situation. I had trouble pricing Jesus Rodriguez because he just kind of came up out of nowhere. And I'm thinking, oh, well, first of all, nothing's sneaky, right? Like nothing is at all sneaky. And you know, now with the Patrick Bailey trade, now it's definitely not. But this is a guy that played 4 straight games. And you know, here he is. He played right field one of those games. He's been producing, 24 years old. Remember, he came from the Yankees. And Susak will be back eventually, but they work as a platoon most likely. I mean, they just called up Logan Porter, by the way.
Yeah, they're both right-handed, so there's no platoon there. They called up Logan Porter just to take Bailey's roster spot because Susak's still on the rehab. So I don't really know what they're going to do. I think, you know, for everything I'm reading and listening to as a Giants fan, they are absolutely in love with this kid. But I don't know if there's going to hand him the starting job as far as catcher. But he is a UT that can play all over the infield. They are talking about Casey Schmidt playing in the outfield. If that happens, Rodriguez can kind of jump around the infield then, mm-hmm. as well as play catcher. I absolutely love the profile. Elite bat to ball, under a 10% strikeout rate. You know, hits the ball great. Already had an opposite field home run at Oracle, which does not happen with righties. He did not have a lot of power in the minors, but he's really showing immediately that he can hit. So I think his prices are going to be significantly higher right now than what you have in your range.
Yeah, he's moving up.
Yeah. Yep. But I don't know how much he's going to play. I'd probably say they get him in the lineup at least 3-4 days a week, but I don't know who's going to be the starting catcher between the two of them.
And he had 30 stolen base attempts too last year in the minors. 9 caught, but yeah, 21 stolen bases. So we'll see. Giants don't run much, really. I don't know if they're still bottom.
Well, you can't steal first, so it's hard to steal second when you're not on first. They're abysmal. But yeah, I think the outfield experiment with him is over. Watching him dive for a ball and miss it by 2 feet. That cost them the game, actually. So they're going to move him around. They're going to get him in the lineup. So, but his batting average is the calling card, and he is a big athlete too. So,
yeah, Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. You know, we can do the pitchers afterwards, but just, you know, sticking with the hitters here, I'm looking at 15 team options. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's nothing that just stands out wildly. It just feels like a bunch of trappy stuff, or just, you know, you catch a guy on an off week and then all of a sudden you're dropping him next week and then he goes off the next week. And, you know, I'm talking about guys like Ezekiel Duran, who didn't do anything last season. He was in the minors for most of last year. All of a sudden, Wyatt Langford's out. Duran's hitting second and producing, hitting, you know, that's a great spot. You hit between Nimmo and Seager, you're in a good opportunity. You have a good opportunity, but I don't know, this Rangers offense, you really kind of set the tone for it in the preseason. You're like, these guys suck. And you're right.
They're not on the Giants bad, but I mean, Corey Seager's hitting almost 200 now. I don't know what's going on there, but talk about bad vibes in Texas. Yeah, I mean, there's nobody really on the list other than the big five we talked about that is really exciting this week. This is now when you kind of try to identify someone cheap. You know, you're looking at playing time, you know, someone that's been really hot. And with this injury, I'm wondering if Paul Goldschmidt gets a little more of a run. He's been pretty good this year when he plays. Obviously, he's playing just against lefties, but he's at a 19% barrel rate. That's kind of absurd for the old man. Good.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I have him on two of my DCs where I have no corner infielders, and I've been playing him for the last 2 weeks because everyone else is hurt. And he had been, you know, just doing nothing, zeros. And all of a sudden, it's just like, you know, just like finding pennies, or not pennies, but like $100 bill under the couch cushion, which doesn't happen anymore
It's pennies.
He's been producing, though. It's really nice. That's a good call. That's a good call. He's not on my list right now. You know, other 12 team guys that we're looking at, and these are, you know, we're not talking about like 90% roster guys. We're talking about guys that you can pretty much get in a lot of leagues. I wrote down Zach Geloff. I think just the fact that he's been playing a lot of third base with Max Muncy out, his strikeout rate is down. The A's are at home all week. He's kind of interesting. Jake McCarthy's been stepping it up. And then I have one guy who I picked up last week, thought was going to go for more, but I picked up Esturi Ruiz on a team where I have basically I have to play him because I have Stanton, Langford, and Luis Robert Jr. all on my IL, on my bench, just stash those outfielders. So I just picked up Esturi Ruiz. I'm like, he's not going to play that much, but when he does, maybe he'll run. And boy, has he been running, dude. Like, I don't know if you've seen his stolen bases, but like, it's just, he was like, I looked at the box score. He's like, oh, he's 0-for-0. Oh, he hasn't hit yet. Wait, what? He's got 2 stolen bases already? Like, what's going on with this guy?
Yeah, you and every smart player in the industry was on Esturi Ruiz last week. And, you know, you guys, that's why you guys are all so good. You know, he'd been really hitting well in the minors, got called up. I was still too concerned about the playing time to put to a big enough bid to get him. But that's those steals, and he's going to earn more playing time with the way he's doing. And he's actually hitting a lot better than he has in the past, too. So there's actually some you know, realistic changes there in the profile that could earn more playing time. And Jacob Marcy's really struggled, you know, to start the year, you know, as well as Owen Casey. So there's some opportunities to earn more playing time pretty quick. You know, every time I think Marcy's going to, you know, be sent down, he hits a 3-run homer. So yeah. I'm not hating that because I have a lot of Marcy, and so I've been struggling through that. But yeah, there was a lot of people I respect that were picking up Ruiz last week. So they were on it. I missed that one.
And I talked to none of them. I know there are a lot of respecty people, but that's cool. That's good to hear that other people were in on Ruiz. Colin Cowser, Michael Massey, those are just names, I guess, right? Like, I mean, is Cowser ever going to get back to being anything?
He sucks. Just like your Michael Massey note. I just can't make contact. You know, these guys that strike out this much just don't last. So yeah, I love your Zach Geloff call. He's really making some improvements playing third base. Couple other guys I had listed. Zach McKinstry's back. Looks like he's playing a little bit. Von Grissom's starting to really get some playing time against righties, and his skills look like they're legit. Miguel Andujar is starting to get a nice run at DH. And then Masataka Yoshida is getting a lot of run when the righties are on the mound for Boston. Mm-hmm. So there's some sneaky ones to put on your list as far as, you know, cheap couple dollar players. You know, again, we're in a week-to-week game. As much as we want to have a fab guy be the rest of the season, we just plug and play and forget about it. You know, it's almost like DFS where we're just trying to find that hot week and who's next on that.
Yeah, it's a good call on Von Grissom because pretty much had him as a short side platoon guy, seeing that the Angels were going to have four lefties that they were going to face. So like, oh, it's a good week to stream Grissom. But he's, I think he's like under 20% rostered in main events. And they don't really have a second baseman. And like you mentioned, he's actually been hitting a bit against righty. So he's just, you know, a guy we've been waiting on forever, just spent a lot of time injured in the minors, things like that, different organizations. But, you know, when your only competition is Adam Frazier, who feels like he should be like 43, but is only 34, probably in a good spot.
If you can't win that, then you're in some trouble.
Might as well retire.
Our buddy Uncle Ted made a really good call on the chat too. Zach Cole, Astros got a lot of righties this week. He hits the ball really hard. One of those profiles is swing and miss. But if he can get some run playing time wise, he could have a hot week, and that's kind of what you're looking for.
Is this true? Is this factual? Zach Cole hits as hard as Spencer Jones? I do not know.
I don't know if anybody hits it as hard other than Stanton, but Zach Cole can hit it really hard.
Yeah. Outside of that, yeah, I mean, all right, well, let's talk some 12-team hitters. So much for Luke Raley flying under the radar. Seven RBI game. They've got six righties coming up. He's got the Cal Raleigh juju because Cal Raleigh doesn't have it, but, you know, Raley's got all that juju there in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, Raley's been kind of hit or miss, but he got really hot. And then if you're looking to sneak him through, you know, a little quick week to get those runs and RBIs and homers, that's not happening now after that seven RBI, two home run game. So, you know, those bids just went up and, you know, got to look at the schedule. He doesn't play against lefties. So, you know, if he's got righties, you know, plug him in, keep moving. You know, I'm a big fan of Addison Barger. He's back, you know, crazy high bat speed, really started the year, you know, struggling and then, you know, went on the IL. So hoping he can turn it around. I'm looking at kind of picking him up or stashing him everywhere. One of the guys on the list that stood out to me.
Yeah. For 12 teamers, there's an abundance of corner infielders. There are a lot of them. I brought him up in the article, but it's, you know, beyond Barger, who's first, who is corner and third in outfield. You've got Andrew Vaughn still available. I'm shocked that he isn't up to 100% rostered there. You've got Rumfeld on Arizona, who just continues to produce, hitting against lefties now, and just a real stud. You know, we talked about Luke Raley, of course. By the way, the Seattle Mariners, they have seven games upcoming this week. Right now, it all projects to be against seven righties. But the following week, they're going to play a couple of teams with heavy lefty teams. So think about it more as like in a 12-teamer, he's probably more of like a one-week rental. I think in 15-teamers, you can work with a guy like that. Like I've been carrying Jake Bowers all year, and he's been great. And there are just some weeks where you just know you're not going to be able to optimize it. And maybe when he's got a bunch of lefties, you make sure you have a corner infielder and play for him. But a guy like Luke Raley, he's 12% available in the main event. I would be careful like going too crazy for him and definitely, you know, kind of easy in the 12 teamers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, temper your expectations. You hear me?
Oh, we lost you there for a second. Yeah.
Am I back?
We'll wait till you come back. But, yeah, Andrew Vaughn, Casey Schmidt, the aforementioned. You mentioned him earlier. Nathaniel Lowe for the Reds as well. He's been doing really well. So yeah, the 12 teamers are loaded. Are you back, Jay?
You hear me? Still nothing, Vlad?
That's okay. We'll get you in a second. All right. Maybe he'll jump back out and back in. Now on mute. Oh.
All right, I'm going to jump again. You're back.
Yeah. Let's add Jason back to the stage. He'll jump in here in a minute. Want to talk a little bit about the two rookies, Travis Bazzana and Sam Antonacci. Antonacci's really starting to pick things up, you know, in the first week. He had been sitting again a little bit against lefties. Now he's the leadoff man. Talking about Antonacci and Bazzana here. And do you have a preference between these two guys? I know one of them's got the outfield eligibility as well.
Man, you got to love two great last names, don't you? I was pretty bullish on Antonacci earlier in the year, and I picked him up a lot of places. I've been holding him. He's leading off now. Seems like he's playing almost every day. What I'm concerned about, he's already been caught stealing 2 out of 3 times. I thought this was a 30 to 40 stolen base guy, but the bat to ball is really good. It looks like he belongs up there. I think Travis Bazzana is similar to like what we were saying with Waldschmidt, where he's going to be a really good baseball player, but I don't know how much fantasy. But as I say that, he's got a lot of stolen base attempts already, and he's running. I just don't know how well his bat's going to play as far as the strikeout rate and everything. So I lean Antonacci. I might be on the small side of that, but that's where I am.
Yeah, no, I'm leaning with you. I think just that, you know, there's a little bit of magic there with the White Sox and Murakami and Montgomery, and Vargas is finally, you know, getting things going. There's something special there going on, and I think Antonacci will get to run. Whenever I see Bazzana, all I can think of is, like, you know, if you have kids and, you know, like the Minions, it's like, Bazzana!
You know, it feels like you should be playing on the Savannah Bananas, right?
Yeah, that would, yes, yeah, Banana, Bazzana, yeah, dude, what a name. What a name. He, you know, I mean, Stephen Kwan is struggling so much. Like, what are the opportunities? Bazzana's been walking too. Is there any chance that he could be the leadoff man?
You know, with managers like Stephen Vogt, he's pretty loyal. I don't believe that Kwan's going to get bumped down, and it's just a matter of time, you know, back of the baseball card. I just don't think Bazzana gets on base at a high enough clip to bump Kwan out of that spot.
Yeah, that's fair. That makes sense. Let's do, you know, everybody wants to talk closers. We'll get to the closers here. 15 team starting pitchers. You know, we touched on Flaherty. I'll just kind of throw all these guys out here and let's discuss them. You've got, let's start here. The converted starters, the two guys, Ben Brown, Griffin Jacks. Griffin Jacks, we drafted him a lot of people drafted him as a closer. I did in a couple of places. Dropped, of course, struggling. We know he can pitch better than that. Used to be a starter with the Twins before he became a shutdown reliever. Ben Brown had a great KBB last season, but was getting hit up, moved out of the rotation. Now this year, he's moving back in. These guys are working themselves up. They're building themselves up, probably still a couple of starts away from, you know, being able to qualify for win, getting up over 50, 60, you know, pitches into, you know, real stuff. Do you have a preference between these two? Let's talk in 12 teamers. Are they even, you know, are they even worth considering or stashing on the bench to consider?
12s, I'm leaning no. I was actually kind of rostering Ben Brown in 12s here and there just for matchup purposes. But with the amount of strikeouts and wins you need in 12s, you cannot afford to start that guy that's going to go 3-4 innings and maybe get to the fifth. And we all know how the win percentage goes down when you only pitch 5 rather than 6 or 7 innings. You know, if they had a starter or an opener in front of Jacks or Brown, it'd be awfully intriguing because the skills are really good. Griffin Jacks looks like he kind of is figuring it out as a starter, which is interesting. I threw some bids on him last week, but I got some more priority guys. But I love Ben Brown. I drafted him everywhere. He's been on all my 15 team rosters. He got a save for me. I don't know how far they're going to let him stretch out because he was that 2-inning guy. But if they let him become a legit starter, I think he becomes a top 50 starter immediately, rest of season play. Griffin Jacks is interesting because he's always had such elite stuff. He just has not been the same guy this year. But the thing I love about both Brown and Jacks is over the 50% ground ball rate. You know, that really limits damage when they're keeping that ball in the ground. So I'm a fan of both, but I lean Ben Brown for the two of them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I do lean Ben Brown. I mean, a pitcher as good as him, if they've decided that they're going to stretch him out and move him in the rotation, I mean, I think at some point, like, you just move Colin Ray out, right? Or someone gets hurt eventually, or just, you know, something happens, or you go six man for a bit. But like, you know, a guy like Ben Brown, if he's actually figuring out as a starter, it works. And the reason why they really needed him in relief and pitching multi-innings is because all the relievers were hurt. Plancy was out, Phil Maton, Hunter Harvey, Thielbar, like, really needed him. And so, yeah, just makes sense for him to get in there. Tampa Bay could really use Griffin Jackson in that rotation as well. I mean, they've got some aces, horses there. Shane McClanahan, Drew Rasmussen. They lost Pepio for the year. So it really makes sense. I think they made that decision kind of when they knew Pepio was gone for the year. So, yeah, in 12-teamers, probably not going to do it. 15-team kind of, you know, two-start guys. There are quite a few, and every week it's the same thing. I feel very negative in my writing. Like, there's very few times where I see somebody like, oh, I have to have him, right? I think that's just kind of the nature of the beast of 15-teamers. Like, Brady Singer just stinks, and he's in for the Reds. We saw what Flaherty's been doing. Roki Sasaki, I've now gone from, like, his biggest fan to, like, now he's actually has been pitching well the last couple of times, but now I don't trust him, and he might be moved out of the rotation. By the way, Snell might be worse. And I don't like this guy, dude. Like, I really don't like Blake Snell. He cannot be a Dodger for much longer. They said, like, he wasn't going to pitch or something today. He's been on rehab forever, and it was something with the fingers, and he's a gamer.
Oh, that was I think you got spoofed, dude. I saw that. I think that one was I chuckled when I saw it because of he is a gamer. Yeah. But yeah, I don't believe that was true, but he is not the most, like, it's funny. You listen to, I listen to all the Giants stuff, and the beat writers just couldn't stand him. Basically, if you needed a big moment, he was not going to be there. He's just kind of ride the coattails, he's an eye guy. But I think the Dodgers have him for quite a while, Vlad. I don't think you're going to get rid of him that easy. So good luck with him.
Yeah, thanks.
Poor Dodgers.
Yeah, poor us. That's not us. I'm not. Some people don't like it when you say us.
Fans, so it's not fans are part of the team. Well, you can say us.
Yeah. Thank you. So what about these guys? Jack Flaherty, Brady Singer, Liberatore. By the way, I know that he's at Oakland, or I'm sorry, Sacramento. But I mean, you don't have to start him, but he's somebody I feel like that should be rostered in a 15. Merrill Kelly actually had a really nice start. You figured he's going to be bouncing back at some point, but he's at Coors next week. Let's talk about those kind of higher rostered 15 team guys.
Yeah, like we talked about Flaherty to start the show. I think he needs to be rostered. He came off a really good start. He's going to whipsaw you, but with the depth and pitching now and the guys we're looking at, I think he has to be rostered, and he's not going to be cheap this week after that start. Brady Singer's boring. He feels like a guy you should be starting, but you shouldn't be starting, but he should be on your roster. Merrill Kelly, I think we just got to wait and see. Finally got a good start. I drafted him and stashed him. I actually started him this first start when he got blown up, so he's been on my bench since. Liberatore, I just can't do. The 7% K-minus walk, the 24% CSW, 38% ground ball rate. He's going to have some good starts here and there, but he ain't it for me.
That's fair.
I think Chris Bassitt is very usable. I drafted him in a bunch of places as an SP8. He'll figure it out. That's what these guys do. I think you have some sort of contract negotiation that you have to list Roki Sasaki in every one of your articles. You're going to have to share that with me offline, what they're paying you to list him every single week. I don't think Brandon Sproat's ready. I actually am looking at stashing Robert Gasser on the couple places he was drafted. Sproat's too hit or miss right now. I think he needs going to get sent down and kind of refined in the minors.
He's been mostly miss, and it's a tough spot because I'm just ready to drop him. And all of a sudden, the tantalizing two-start week. But I mean, this guy has a 14% walk rate right now in the minors. In the majors. He's been awful. He finally had a nice start, 4 scoreless innings, but it was only 4 innings. So yeah, that's a bummer. Some of the lower rostered guys, I just dropped JT Ginn. What a man. Goes out and shoves. He's going to have a nice two start in a couple of weeks here. Is he going to go for a lot, like 40 plus, like he has in the past?
I think everyone's in your boat where you keep picking him up and dropping him and missing that good start. I was actually looking at that. I think that's going to be on the high side of the bids. Now, it depends on the league, you know, how many pitchers are going to get picked up. But I still believe it's probably in the 20 to 30s. But, you know, he could open up FAB at, you know, 7-10 on Sunday and it could be $75, you know. You know, it's just kind of league dependent, but he looked really good, but that was a blowout, you know, wasn't a competitive game. You know, he does have a nice start, but it is at home, which is always scary in Sacramento. And then, you know, you got those road starts the following week in the two steps. So I'm looking at him, you know, his underlying isn't great, but it's not terrible. You know, only at 11% K minus walk, Sierra's at 4.2. Hard hit data is nice on 35% and the ground ball at over 50%. So, you know, there is some positive things there, but, you know, man, it's just, man, it's hit or miss. I've had him on my roster, I think two different times already this year. And we're in week six or seven. So he's going to be that guy that's going to be floating on the waiver wire constantly.
I think I had him like four times last year. It was crazy. Just like,
Me too.
And it was, remember, it was like last year was like off a great start, and then he's got a two-start week, and he got injured in that first start. Man, it's brutal. Ty Madden for the Tigers. Steven Kolek is up. Remember him? He was kind of pitching out of his mind for the Padres, but his underlying metrics are not that great. And Joe Boyle as a potential stash. He's going to be in the minors for a couple more weeks, but he could be back very easily, you know, tantalizing guy for the 15 leagues.
Yeah, and he looked like he actually had some skills gain or, you know, stuff change when he was healthy. So he was actually pitching pretty well before he got hurt. I got excited about Ty Madden because he was a pretty big prospect for Detroit. And then I saw a start, you know, when Skubal got hurt. And then I looked at the minor league numbers and I moved on pretty quick. I wasn't excited about that. Kolek, I do like, I don't love. I think he knows how to pitch. So it's kind of a wait and see on that. It'll be on the waterfall. The guy I really like is Griffin Canning. I think he looked really good his first start. I think San Diego needs him. And so I think out of that group, him and JT Ginn are going to be my two targets.
I like that. I like that call. By the way, Drew Anderson, do you think he's a little sneaky coming out of the KBO, a great season, and he might be making a spot start? He might kind of get into that rotation as well.
Yeah, it's what's going on with Holton and Anderson. Who do we know who's in the rotation? I don't think they're stretching out Holton, right?
No, not stretching out Holton. It does sound like Casey Mize is going to be back pretty soon.
And Verlander's throwing too.
Yeah, he's throwing too. Yeah, so we'll see. Mize will be back soon. I mean, besides Verlander, everyone else is out for quite a while.
Yeah.
On the 12-team front, Bryce Miller, I think he's available in about 30 or 40% of 12-team OCs. Mike Burrows finally had a nice start. You got Bailey Ober for two starts. Ober?
Nope, not after last year. Can't do it, won't do it.
Anything you say about those guys? I just got my thing isn't charging. Hold on.
No, all good. I think Mike Burrows is the target there. I almost like him as much as Snelling, just with the team context. Been unlucky to start the year, got great stuff. So I think Burrows should be rostered in the 12s. Obviously, Snelling's going to go for a lot. I don't know Bryce Miller what that situation's going to be with. Luis Castillo and the piggybacking comment. I don't know who's coming in first, who's coming in second. I don't know how good Bryce Miller is. I know his velocity was way up in the spring. People got excited. So, you know, for me out of that, you know, those two would be Snelling and Burrows.
Yeah. I don't know how much Luis, it's kind of a weird thing. Luis Castillo has just been an awesome pitcher for so many years, but steady declining over the last few years. And he's unstartable in fantasy, and he might be on his own team too. And by the way, at some point, Cade Anderson's going to be up. Like, that guy is going to go for a pretty penny. I mean, that's that guy. What is it like 70 to 3 Ks to walk or something? He's insane.
It's one of those things. It's like we know how smart major league teams are, but are they wasting bullets in the minors right now? Like, these pitchers, when they're ready, it's like, you know, they only have a limited amount of bullets in the gun, you know, before their arm goes out. And, you know, you have team control for X amount of years. Like, if they are ready, what are we doing? Like, even we talked about Gerrit Cole. Like, why is he still on rehab? Like, he's ready to go. Just get him up there. I know they have a lot of good pitchers, but Cade Anderson's legit. He is absolutely legit. And you want to talk about some coin being dropped if he gets called up. It's going to be pretty.
Yep. I'm saving. That's so funny when we say that, right? We're saving in FAP. Yo, nobody's saving. You're not saving for one guy.
Somebody needs to teach me how to save.
It's not possible.
No.
Closers. Let's wrap up with the closers here. Who catches your eye? We've been talking about, you know, the San Francisco Giants situation for a while. We know it ain't Ryan Walker.
Oh, God.
You were right. You were right, man.
I almost cursed.
You can. It's fine. Then I just have to click, like, this is a, what do you call it? This has swear words or something.
No, I'm a family man, but Ryan Walker is about the closest thing you're going to get me to cursing. That guy is terrible. He needs to be shot into the sun. No thanks. Closers. I was very, very bullish on Eric Miller. I stashed him everywhere, and then he gets on the IL with back spasms. So that was a really kick in the crotch. Caleb Killian came in, got the save, pitched up four runs last night, looked very shaky. I do not believe he's the take it, run with it guy. I am still bullish on Miller. They have another lefty in the minors that's rehabbing that could move him up the leverage ladder as well. But I still can't get over Eric Miller looking in the Reds dugout and basically saying F you, F you, F you, come get me. That's my closer right
there. That's my closer.
A couple other guys, you got the Cincinnati thing. You got kind of a three-headed monster with Graham Ashcraft, Tony Cotillion, and Pierce Johnson, who got the save today. If they get a save tomorrow, then that's going to throw a really wrench into everything for the bidding. Gregory Soto got dropped some places. I don't know how much he's available, if any. Kirby Yates.
30%. Soto's 30% available in 12 teamers and not very much in 15s.
Okay. Kirby Yates came in, but only throwing 91, down 2 miles an hour. Ben Joyce is close, but I would imagine Yates gets the next save chance there. A sneaky one to kind of watch is Jose Ferrer on the Mariners. I know he's been pretty good, and they traded their top prospect to get him. Andres Munoz is really good and really healthy still, so not really calling anything there. And then Garrett Clevenger's back on Tampa Bay. He was a big DC target for a lot of people to get, 10, 15 saves. So another tough saves week. A lot of money going to be wasted, as every week, chasing those closers. And I have multiple teams with zero closers now. Scott Jinstead and I's team drafted Edwin Diaz and Jeff Hoffman in the second and seventh round. And now we spent $60 on Jacob Junis and we got him. And now we have zero saves.
Wow.
Zero closers. So it's a tough year.
Do you still have Hoffman on that team?
Yes. I am not in a hurry to draft Hoffman. He looks really good. The manager says they want to get him back in the role. Varland's been awesome. So, sometimes it's follow the money. Who's making more? Hoffman's making more. I think it takes one crack for Hoffman to get back in it, but can he get in there and not blow it? That's the key.
That's what I'm afraid of, is I have Hoffman in a 15, I drop him. And even though it just looks like, well, Louis Varland's incredible. Like, he's just the next big thing. And he has been, he's been a top three closer in every respect, or reliever this year. But I'm just thinking back to, manager's quote back when Hoffman was struggling. And he's like, no, he's my guy. Yeah, you're right. The money thing. Yeah, there's a lot to think about there. So that might be a little bit of a tough drop.
Yeah. And, as usual, tune into Dan's bullpen report, which drops, I believe, tonight or tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm. Usually Saturdays, but sometimes he has to drop. So today, I didn't see it come in today, so it might be Sunday morning, which actually is better, I think.
It is. We need as much information as we can getting through all this.
Yeah. So yeah, his putt will come out. By the way, you didn't mention you're not into Ryan Zephyrjohn.
No, I don't like guys I can't spell their name.
That's good bias.
He got the last save. He's been decent, but with Yates there and Ben Joyce close to coming back, I'm personally not spend much, if any, on him.
In Cincy, I mean, it's the bids are going to be on Pierce Johnson now, just from that save alone. So if, say, the Reds don't get an opportunity, Tony Santillan has just been brutal, and shockingly brutal, because he's been a really good reliever, but stuff is down, just everything is awful. Ashcraft, like, throws hard, but there's just something about him that doesn't quite, you know, read closer. I'm going to be adjusting things, obviously, with the article and the bid ranges after the save, but, like, Pierce Johnson's been in that spot before, if I'm not mistaken, with the Braves, temporarily, but I think that probably makes the most sense. Like, am I going to drop 50 plus on him? Like, not desperate in that many spots, but we'll see. That's part of the game we play here with these closers.
Yeah, I really got to dig in on that in the leverage ladder and how they were using them before the injury to Pagan. I know Ashcraft actually got the first save chance and he blew it. So I don't know who would pitch the last couple days, all that stuff. But Pierce Johnson, I believe, has got 15 career saves, and so he's done it. He looks pretty good. And like you said, Ashcraft should be better than he is, but he's not. And even if Santillan was pitching good, they love him in that fireman, that Griffin Jacks role that Tampa was using him in before moving him to a starter. So definitely the price of doing business is going up, right?
Yeah. I'm going to say something that may not be popular, but it's just a feeling, and I just have to put it out there. I had a random gut feeling that you should hold on to your Rico Garcias because Helsley's not coming back. I have no justification or reason for it. Just something feels off. Call me crazy, but it's kind of what I might think.
And Uncle Rico is pretty darn good too. So, you know, even if Helsley, you know, comes back, I don't think is he close to coming back? I haven't really seen any. I don't have any Helsley, so I haven't been following it that closely.
Last I saw 5 days ago, he was supposed to resume a throwing program. I don't know if he has started that or not. But for a guy that they said was going to come back or just be on the minimal stay, and we're halfway through that, and I haven't seen anything. I haven't dug in Twitter. Don't love it.
No. Yeah. So I think Rico is going to have the job at least a couple more weeks at minimum. Right. And this could go on months. So yeah, I would not be in a hurry to drop in those shares.
By the way, how funny was it last weekend, how the closers just did the work for us? Instead of us having to split our bids, like, oh, maybe Kittredge or Nunez, where, like, Nunez went in 4 earned runs allowed on Saturday. Kittredge gives up 7 runs on Sunday. You're like, all right, Rico it is.
Yep, just the last man standing.
yeah, that's good, man. I don't know. I don't know if we have any other, like, you know, sneaky guys we missed here and there, but I'm sure there's some. We'll do our best to try to cover that with the Sunday update available on the Discord over at FTN. So you know, hit us up. I'll give you Jason's private cell Batman line if you want.
Yeah, everybody's blocked.
Well, this was fun. Little fab pod. We'll try to mix these in once in a while when our schedule allows it. But thank you for joining me, and, you know, good luck everyone this weekend.
Yeah, happy fabbing. Hope this helped.
All right, everybody, for Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast Live Edition, and we'll talk to you next week.